Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. This is going to be quite the weekend show as we can now talk about moving forward in the U.S. with President Trump elected. We are recording this first segment on Wednesday, and it wasn't really as close of a battle as I think most people thought it would be, as we can fairly confidently say that Trump is the president of the U.S. moving forward after this election. So now we can talk about what the policies could mean, and we're going to focus on the resource sector, starting off chatting with Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. I'll post a link to Exploration Insights in the show notes. Please click that and follow along with what Joe is covering in terms of individual companies. Now, Joe, as I said, look, let's look ahead to the positives and the negatives that Trump, it sounds like, will try to put forward when he is in office. And we're going to tie it all back into the precious metals and critical minerals. Joe, let's first start out of country here. Some of the moves that Trump might do to other countries, break down what you are forecasting, and we will tie this again back into precious metals and critical minerals.
Yeah, thanks for that. Like, I mean, it's not only that he won the presidency, and I think probably good for the U.S. was that one person won it, whoever won it, but won it convincingly. And so there was no legal battle or anything like that. So, but not only did he win it, you know, convincingly, they also, his party kept the Senate, and it looks like they're going to keep the House of Representatives. So basically, and they've got, you know, the Supreme Court. So, I mean, I don't think there's been another more powerful position by the Republican or Democratic Party in a long time, that they not only have the trifecta, but they also have the courts. So whatever they put out, there's a good chance that they will be able to pass it, you know, at least for 2 years until they have another round of elections for, you know, what they call the midterm elections. So in the interim, if we go on the positive side, like avoiding the politics of it in terms of who wins, who loses, I would say, you know, broad strokes, that the Democrats were good for demand for critical minerals because they were all about, you know, climate change and decarbonization and that, but they were not good for permitting local projects, mining projects. They were more about financing processing, but there was little connection between anything that they put in a letter of intent that they would give money to and whether the project would actually get permitted. With the Trump presidency, you know, the idea that they're going to slash regulations, which we saw a little bit of when he was president, in terms of at least Resolution Mining, where they did the land swap and then Biden took the land swap away, that might come back. You know, we might see that road re-implemented for, you know, Trilogy, and that's probably why Trilogy's share price went up. So I can see, you know, positive changes on regulations, permitting for exploration, development, and all that for mining in the U.S. under the Trump administration, at least in the first 2 years before the midterm elections, unless there's a big change. But it seems like he's less about the demand side. So he's trying to potentially eliminate the electric vehicle subsidies and potentially, and he's always about changing what the last president did. And so the IRA was a big deal for Biden. He probably wants to chip away at that one. And one of the big things there was the subsidies allowed for electric vehicles. So that might hinder demand. And then globally, the issue would be the tariffs on countries like China, in terms of, you know, not only their electric vehicles, but all their goods. So if that happens, that could hinder or have a negative impact on commodity consumption by the biggest consumer of commodities, China. So that's probably why we're seeing, you know, copper prices and things like that getting hit. And then on the other side, like in terms of Mexico, like where I just was a couple of weeks ago, they were, you know, a big proponent of nearshoring, like, you know, hey, You're going to impose these tariffs on China. You don't want anything from China. You worry about your supply chain. Let's implement nearshoring. The nearshoring idea, I think, would have been better under the Democrats than they will be under the Republicans, because probably Trump will still impose tariffs on stuff coming from Mexico, as some people are worried that the Chinese and others might use Mexico as a front for bringing up stuff from under the previously known NAFTA agreement. So there's a lot of things happening. And I think the other thing that he wants to do is weaken the US dollar. That might take, the impact off of the tariffs off of goods and services. But the problem is that, if the tariffs are inflationary, which they are, that might increase, force higher interest rates, which would make the dollar stronger. So a lot of different things happening that we'll have to see how they play out.
Well, Joe, let's also consider what it means for precious metals, just from the standpoint that either party, I don't think it really mattered who won as far as they're going to spend more money. We know that. But there is that deficit issue in the U.S., which is typically good for the gold narrative. But like you say, a stronger dollar, typically bad. How do you see the tailwinds and headwinds playing out in the precious metal space?
Hard to know which thematic people will go to. The automatic one would be the US dollar, which would impact all commodities, including gold, negatively impact. But like you said, like maintaining tax cuts that he had before would increase the deficit, which would in the long term be positive for gold. But what we've also seen is, the slashing of regulatory red tape would be positive for Bitcoin. And so there might be a little bit of Bitcoin, eating gold's lunch for a little while.
Yeah, look at the reaction on the back of the election results. Bitcoin shot up to 75,000 and gold dropped damn near $100. Now, of course, these are just short-term moves, but Joe, let's take that a step further. The markets also think that Trump is going to be good for them. So, if we see markets and Bitcoin doing well, does that further leave gold behind?
Potentially, because there was probably more concern about geopolitical tensions. But if we do the political part, I mean, like he's promising to end all these wars. I don't know what that means, but in terms of the Ukraine Russia thing, I think that he will be not a big positive for, continuing funding that the Ukrainian effort. So that might force the Ukrainians to make it into some kind of agreement with Russia. In the end, I mean, he might just consider defunding NATO. He might do something radical like that. That would be very radical. I'm not saying that's what he would do, but he's obviously not pro-NATO. And on the other side, would he be able to end the Israeli-Palestine conflict? I don't know, but I think his election was definitely more of a positive for Israel at this time. But all that geopolitical conflicts that, it's not a long, it doesn't have a long, it doesn't resonate with the gold price for a long time. Those sort of tensions, they tend to be ephemeral, but there's been so many tensions and they kept escalating. That was another reason that gold had done well. If he comes in and starts de-escalating some of this stuff, which he could possibly do, that would, decrease the global geopolitical tensions and maybe, be negative for gold.
But Joe, another big focus on what these business policies could mean would be on the energy sector. And as you said, he's probably going to de-emphasize some of the clean energy and renewable side of things, which would be pushed harder by the Harris administration in favor of oil. But there's a lot of counterintuitive information out there. Like under the Biden administration, oil prices did a lot better than under Trump's regime last time. If he drills, baby, drill with the oil, that may lower oil prices. But what does it mean for something like silver? That's so dependent on solar power and the solar demand, could the focus shifting back to nat gas plants versus solar have an effect on the silver markets?
Yeah, I don't know how much of the compression of the gold to silver ratio is linked to solar panels as opposed to people just being a little bit more fervent for the metal. I would say that, that support from solar is a nice base for silver, but I would think that most of the acceleration of the silver price was more about trying to compress that multiple and people thinking that, okay, silver is the metal to have because gold is doing really well. Silver is lagging. You know, we need to buy silver because gold's doing very well. And if gold stops doing very well, then silver might come back, you know, somewhat. I don't think the US is not the only country that, you know, that has a big solar industry. I think, you know, Europe and other countries are using it, so there's still demand outside of Europe. And as we know, that the EV penetration in the States hasn't been big anyway. So, you know, reducing it's not as if they were taking it, reducing it from a big level. You know, that EV demand is still in other countries like Europe and China. That's still going strong. But I think Trump just tapped into the market that, you know, a lot of these people, you know, through the middle America, let's say, don't drive EVs. They think it's more like the West Coast and the East Coast, which they might not have a lot of affiliation to. And yeah, there's no infrastructure for them to bother having EV. EVs are too expensive because they won't let in cheaper Chinese imports. So they're stuck with the more expensive Teslas and other vehicles, and there's no infrastructure to drive them. I think hybrids would be the way to go still, but nobody seems to talk about those.
That's so true. But hey, we are seeing some companies focus at least a little bit more on some of those hybrids. Joe, because Trump was president starting back in 2016, for that 4-year period, can we use any of that historical reference to see how, especially precious metals or the precious metal stocks fared over that 4-month period and compare it to what might happen now when he's back in?
I don't know, because I would say the Trump presidency, the first one, was more chaotic. I mean, we don't know what this one will look like, but
Yeah, watch your words, Joe. We don't know what we're in for.
I mean, we got to know that, you know, he was probably fighting the House of Representatives, which I believe at that point was still Democratic, and he couldn't pass a lot of things. And his administration, because that was the first time he was president, was obviously highly chaotic. You know, he's not known for being a hard worker, although, you know, he stumped a lot for the last 60 days in terms of his speeches. But I think it's the people that he brings on that will dictate how some of his policies get executed. And that's important. But he's not going to have much opposition anymore. I mean, if they have the House of Representatives and they have the Senate, and a lot of those people know that they got their seats because of him, there's not going to be a lot of people opposing what he does. And he's not going to be the policy wonk. He's not the guy who's going to be saying, this is how I want to do it. It'll be J.D. Vance. It'll be Elon Musk. It'll be all the guys behind him that'll be doing that.
Well, Joe, let's bring copper back into the discussion again with the critical minerals. There's a lot of forces. Obviously, it's a global market, and what happens with China and some of the tariffs will play into it. But with a de-emphasis on, let's say, EVs, that's a demand shrinkage. But then you still have the pro-business side of AI data centers, and look at the response in cryptocurrencies, the crypto mining. Is there still a place for copper to have a good run despite the curtailing forces in his administration?
Yeah, as I said, I mean, the EV demand in the States wasn't really driving a lot of the EV market. The penetration, even in California, wasn't as high as they thought it would be. I think the growth is still in China. The growth is still in Europe and other places in the world. And I don't think it's ever been in the States. One key is the lack of infrastructure and the fact that people still love to drive internal combustion engines. So I don't think that's a big deal. You know, it'll look like a big deal. I still see the problem for copper more being on the supply side than the demand side. And I don't think that changes with the Trump presidency. You know, maybe some of these projects get permitted where they weren't before. But the problem in the end is if we don't have any refining capacity, you know, in the West, though that copper concentrate, if it is a concentrate, has to go to Asia. And again, 50% of the capacity for refining is still in China. So that'll still be problematic. So no matter if Trump's in the or Harris is in, the dynamics on the supply side for copper do not change.
So considering that, but there could be maybe some more permits issued Do you look more favorably on any of these US projects, either copper or critical minerals, what have you? Anything US focused that could have an easier permitting landscape, or is that kind of just one peg in a much bigger picture?
I think permitting will be much easier because his whole mandate is to deregulate, and so there's a lot of red tape. And the issues under the Biden administration, where some projects were provided permits, like the road permit for Trilogy South 32's Arctic project, I think is 211 miles that AIDA was looking to get. They got the permit, then after 5 years of advocating for it and thousands of pages of documentations and meetings, and then it was taken away because an NGO group came out of the woodwork. So I don't see that happening in under a Trump administration, which would be a positive for mining. And that might offset some of the issues on the demand side with critical minerals. But because there are issues with the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, on a state-by-state basis, because some states which are Republican-led have had benefit from that, and I doubt if they'd wanted to take it away. So it won't be like a global mandate, in terms of every, this is what we're going to do. Every state will be different. And he likes to basically, give especially Republican governors the ability to, run their own states and do their own thing.
Well, just along that topic, are there any states that you look at most favorably in the U.S. as far as for mining projects and permitting and social license? Are there states that you like to be in and states that you avoid?
Oh, there's lots of states to avoid. And I don't think the federal government will change some states' opposition to mining. It's a very local thing. But if there's a state and if there's a group that approves a mining operation, but it's the federal government that's stopping it, that will be removed pretty easily, I think. So if the federal government is the problem with a project, I think that under a Trump administration, it would look more favorable in terms of the potential development or whatever they're trying to do.
Okay, Joe, let's talk more broad metals markets, driving down into the stocks then, because October was a pretty good month, even for a lot of the juniors I noticed. In the middle of the month, even trailing to the end of the month, juniors were getting attention even without issuing any sort of news. We were seeing more financings in the market. It seemed like investors were getting much more excited about precious metals. Precious metals were breaking out. Gold was consistently hitting all-time highs. Silver had broken above that 3250 level. But in the last couple of weeks, that interest has faded a little bit. What's your assessment of the overall health of the resource equity market, especially in terms of the juniors?
Yeah, I would say that, that break or pause that you're talking about was probably leading up to the election to know which side it would break. And nobody wanted to basically buy or sell or anything unless they had a great opinion on which way it was going to go. So you did have the Trump trade in terms of the equity markets. The equity markets seem to have reacted very positively to the Trump election. They've obviously hit a new 52-week high on the, or record high on the S&P 500. I would say going forward for juniors in critical minerals, I would like to see how that plays out because we've been looking at critical minerals and saying, okay, well, these guys can get funded, through the US, different agencies to shore up the critical mineral supply chain. How's that going to work going forward? Is that funding going to still be available? Like, is Perpetua still going to get funded? Is that money going to go to them? Is that, that sort of thing? I mean, I think what's committed is committed, but if it hasn't been committed, is there any risk to that going forward? That would be a question to me because that was, in terms of development projects, one source of benefit from the Democrats in terms of being a source of funding. But at the same time, they were having a hard time getting permitted. So now it seems like the reverse, that they could get the permit, but they might have a hard time getting some of this funding.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic on either side of it. It seems like it's difficult to get both at the same time for the mining industry. But I do want to bring M&A into the discussion, Joe. You track a lot of it. In the silver space, we saw and Silvercrest taken out by First Majestic and Coeur Mining. And then in the gold side, we've seen Next Gold merge with Signal. We've seen Mineral Alamos take over Sabre Gold. And we saw Aura take over Bluestone in Guatemala. More M&A on both the silver and gold side. What are your thoughts on M&A?
Well, I mean, M&A is, I think the intermediates got to really think about where they're going to get their growth. And, you know, people have been leaning towards paying a premium on production and consolidating because that's what basically the industry wants. I'm interested in seeing if on Mexico, where I was a couple of weeks ago, I was at a mining conference in Sonora, which is basically a mining state. And this is a conference that's, you know, well attended. Yeah, but it's more of a contractor sort of conference, you know, big shovels, drilling companies, that sort of thing. And I could make out just in a corner, there might have been five or six mining companies in that conference, you know, actually with booths, you know. So it was a very, I don't know, suppressed sort of a mining conference where very few operators were actually attending with sponsored booths. They might have been attending and walking around, but they'd not a lot of them had sponsored booths. And the impression I got was, with the new government, it might still be problematic. But then the other issue is that they're really counting on this nearshoring. And if the Trump government, you know, imposes tariffs on Mexico and that might hinder nearshoring, do they return to mining? I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. But there was a lot of the problem with Mexico right now is it's people who are in Mexico that are investing in Mexico. The issue is that we're not getting anybody from outside coming in for the M&A or building projects. I know that Teck's copper strategy includes their 50-50 joint venture with Agnico Eagle at the San Nicolas, you know, polymetallic, which is copper-rich mine, I mean project, which is an open pit in Mexico. So those are the sort of things I would look at to see if, you know, that sort of stuff gets permitted. And whether anybody outside comes in, does somebody like Agnico that, you know, that comes in and does a $500 million acquisition of a 50-50 joint venture in San Nicolas like they did several years ago, would they do that again? Does that somebody else come into Mexico? That would be what I'd be watching in some of these places. But also in terms of funding the juniors, I was at a conference in Toronto several weeks ago where the Pear Tree guys were there and they do a lot of the flow through shares and the charity flow through. And they were sort of hinting at if the current, you know, the minimum tax rules come in, that would have a negative impact on flow through going forward. It could reduce some aspects of flow through by a third. So that won't be very good for some of these juniors with assets in Canada.
Yeah, no kidding. Who knows what's going to happen here, Joe, but very interesting market. I guess just another broad question is, where are you seeing some of the best opportunities in these equities, whether it's metal focused, whether it's stage focused, whether it's jurisdictional focused? A lot of these stocks, I think, have revalued to a certain extent, but you take a look at longer term charts and a lot of them are still very far off of their highs, especially if you're looking at some of the smaller names. Some of the larger names, those are at all-time highs. So where are you seeing some of the best opportunities, or are you seeing opportunities right now?
Well, I would say, like, in terms of if we go to critical minerals, I would still say that if you could find a critical mineral project in a good jurisdiction that's on the lower half of the cost curve and can beat, like if it was nickel, beat Indonesia in terms of costs. I know the ESG stuff that people were talking about has less impact nowadays on whether a project gets built or funded, you know, though it's constantly hyped. And that goes the same for copper. Look for those kind of projects. They'll get built because the supply side still is an issue for a lot of these critical minerals. And on the gold side, again, it's got to be cost curve. You got to be on the lower part of the cost curve, and then it's got to be a permittable project. That's what's going to get taken out. If the project, you know, is on the lower part of the cost curve, but has water issues, or, you know, it needs too much upfront capital, it'll be harder to build, and so it'll be a harder project to take out. I mean, you know, we could just use an example as B2Gold's acquisition of Sabina for the Back River project and how much more capital they've had to spend and how much more delays they've had versus their, I mean, even though the acquisition looked, you know, cheap, they've probably more than made up for it with the additional capital they put into that project and the delays.
All right, Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. Always interesting to hear your insights in the resource sector, Joe. And boy, oh boy, we're going to have a lot to talk about now that we have at least a little bit more clarity on U.S. politics and now what President Trump is going to do and how that will impact metals and the underlying equities. Joe, as always, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on this weekend show.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.